All right. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the 99%. My name is Jesse Vondracek. I'm a professional triathlete and coach. I'm here with Elliot Bassett.
Hey, everybody. Elliot here, and I am very much just a coach.
And Marilyn Chakota.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
And we are going to talk to you today about getting the most out of your own coach. And all of us have been on like an athlete and a coach in the coaching relationship. Elliot's been way more of a coach, but at least for a small amount of time, an athlete. And I guess, right, Elliot?
Yeah, definitely. All right, I've been very much a coach.
You weren't nodding or anything. I was nervous. Did I already?
I've definitely been on the athlete end of the things, but even in college, I was both coaching the team, but I also had, I guess, the assistant coach who would yell the workouts at us while I was doing them. So, but of course, in other sports and when I ran in college briefly and everything, very much had coaches. So yes.
And yeah, Marilyn's been an athlete in many sports over the years, as well as obviously a coach for a long time. So we've both all of us have been athletes and coaches. And so we've learned through our own mistakes what makes great communication with an athlete and a coach. And I guess we're going to talk about like the process in which you you become an athlete with a coach and kind of what that looks like. So Marilyn's going to kick it off for us.
Yeah, thanks, Jesse. You know, it's changed over the years. And like we've talked a lot before, we've all been in this game a long time. And if I think back to when I first started coaching, it was as simple as, you know, maybe meeting someone in person or getting an email or a referral, and you exchanged a few emails and you were on your way. And now the industry, you know, it's a good thing. It's a big industry now. It's good for all of us. And there's a lot of athletes and races and coaches, but it's much more of a professional. I've had to develop a professional setup process, especially with being primarily a remote coach, because you know, it's important not only for athletes to really get a clear idea of who they're hiring and if that's who they want to work with, but it's also important for us as coaches to be able to interview the athlete back and say, hey, are you the type of athlete that I'm actually going to be able to help? Am I going to be able to make you better? Am I going to be able to make you faster? Am I going to be able to help you improve? Because ultimately, figuring all that stuff out at the beginning, are we a good match, you know, is really important. And honestly, way, way back in the day when we started noticing these changes, I went through and figured out a series of questions. I actually sat down with someone who developed like, it's almost like what you would do for someone who's developing a dating app now, but it's, you develop, yeah, seriously. He sat down and he asked me like 2 days worth of questions. And he was like, I'm going to ask you all kinds of questions from all over the place. And he was writing things down. And then finally, at the end of it, he came to me with this list of questions. It was a list of 20 questions that he said, you can send this to somebody. And the way they answer these questions is going to prompt how you feel. And that's going to help you decide whether you're a good match or not without meeting them in person. And so I started using that kind of questionnaire system probably over 10 years ago. And of course, it's evolved and changed over time, but having that, you know, really clear athlete questionnaire up front, and then also presenting a good, I guess, counter of that would be athlete code of conduct of knowing like, this is how I expect my athletes to act and what I expect out of you as an athlete, and then taking the process from there. I think, you know, basically getting things out up front is really important now.
I just should throw this out here on the air so I don't get in too much trouble. I actually stole some questions off of your questionnaire and added them to mine.
Perfect. That's why that stuff's there. Yeah, I put that stuff there.
Yeah, no, there was definitely some good questions that I like didn't really think of that were a little bit different than just like the straightforward, like what are experiences have you had, that kind of got a little bit more at the mental side, which I added to my onboarding process, which I really liked. So good job.
Yeah, that's
awesome. You guys send me the link because Jesse's seen my questionnaire and apparently didn't use it. So yeah. I know mine was not as well thought out, but obviously I also have a questionnaire and there's a few key points that basically if somebody's not on board with it, it helps me direct that as well, that it might be a rough go from the athlete coaching relationship.
I mean, I think that the main point is that before you even ever get started, like before we dive into the, you know, communication sides of things, and once you're going and it's like, just like anything, it's important to put expectations out there up front, and not only just from the athlete point of view, but from the coach's point of view, so that there's no confusion. It's like when you walk into a restaurant or a room, you know what all the rules are. You know, you can't walk into this restaurant and grab a bunch of chairs and start throwing them around, because you'll probably get kicked out, you know? So like, even if now with the way the coaching industry has evolved, people need to know, like, hey, this is my coaching philosophy. This is how I work. And this is, but these are also my expectations of you. And if they read that and something doesn't sit right for that with them, then they can continue on and find someone who does. And then, you know, goes both ways.
Do you find that, or either of you, that even when you have this setup process, you know, I do it as well, that it still takes time, even if somebody, let's say, hires you and you start coaching them, it still takes time for somebody to actually get comfortable and find their boundaries, because it's just like, it's a business transaction at the end of the day, just with a lot of emotions involved, right? It's somebody's putting their sweat equity into what they're doing. And a lot of times it's the most important thing in their life. So it's this weird combination of every moment of their waking life might be focused on this thing, but at the end of the day, it is this weird business transaction. I think that balance makes it harder, even when you have all those initial questions. And to me, I often like try to update people or prompt them as you're talking to them a month, 2 months, even a year down the road, as to what is acceptable, and like whether it's and I guess that's what we want to talk about, Jesse. So I guess what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I totally agree. I feel like I have athletes on, you know, all ends of the spectrum, but I think one of the things I'm constantly working on with my athletes is communicating more. A lot of athletes are kind of like, oh, I don't want to bother you, or I don't want to take up that much of your time. And I'm like, well, you know, like the more information I have, the better I can do my job, right? So getting them to communicate more, and then getting them to communicate effectively with what they're telling me is definitely part of the beginning of the process of working on, like, you know, asking probing questions when they give me like a description of their workout. Like, you know, I have some athletes who would just like run through power numbers. I'm like, well, I can see that. I can see the workout, right? But like, how did it feel? And kind of asking some of those questions and getting them to know like how to respond and what to put in like a workout description, I think takes a lot of time.
I just realized I'm assuming we're all on board that we're okay saying if a coach never asks you any questions and doesn't want to hear anything about you, probably not a coach for anybody. Are we okay with that statement?
Yeah, totally. Okay. And that's what I was just about to say. Like once they you do that very initial, like, here's all the rules up front, then of course it's followed up with like, okay, now let's jump on a phone call and ask each other as many questions as necessary to feel comfortable. And then I always say to people, like, okay, these are the initial, like, hi, nice to meet you. We're just getting to know each other. And then I always tell people right up front, it usually takes about a good 3 months to like, here's all the rules. Here's all the expectations. I know what you want from me. You know what I want from you. And then we're going to take the first 3 months with lots of wiggle room of just trying to learn about each other and figure each other out. I set that up at the beginning, like, it's going to take, you know, up to as long as 3 months for us to really get to know each other. Like, you get to know how I communicate, I get to know how you function as an athlete and how you communicate and how we're going to get the most out of each other. So find that first 3 months, the more of that questions you're talking about, and the more like a coach can, it's like coach initiated, you know, how are you doing? How are you feeling? Do you understand the workout? I think that's, you know, a really important part of it. And then once you've worked with someone for a while, you start to learn their, you know, what works for them and what doesn't. And
you know, how I know you're more professional than me. I tell I tell everyone 4 months, that exact same thing. It takes 4 months to really get it. So I've got some work to do. You're a solid 33% ahead of me.
Right. I'm beating you, in the race.
But yeah, I mean, I agree 100%, right, with everything you just said.
Yeah, I mean, I think like before when things were a little bit more in person, the way Elliot and I started working together was, I mean, obviously we had like a recommendation in order to work together, but I think we went on a ride at some point, and
it would have been in Durango, I think.
Yeah.
And for the listener, Jesse, I would have met you, geez, 12 years ago, something like that. 13.
Yeah. And, 13, I think.
And then I ended up coaching you mostly 9 years straight, a few breaks, and then I am very much not your coach at the moment, but if you have questions, just because I looked over your workouts for so many years, you ask me questions, and I try to help, and sometimes I screw up.
But anyways, but yeah, it was a good decade. But yeah, that I think like those, that kind of thing where you can go for like a 2-hour ride with someone, and you questions come up that might not come up on a phone call. Unfortunately, that's a little harder to do now. That's why I think it's important to kind of revisit those questions where you can't just get it done in one phone call, because I don't know, as soon as I hang up the phone with someone, I'm like, oh, I should have asked you like 3 more questions that I forgot about. So kind of having that ongoing process of getting to know someone, it does take time to develop that relationship where you guys are on the same page, at least most of the time.
Yeah, I've done everything from every single athlete that calls me for an interview, we go through that whole, you know, first phone call that's usually about an hour long of all this, you know, all of that stuff. And then I actually say that up front. I'm like, look, when we hang up here, you're going to have a list of things of like, oh, I wish I asked her this. And what about this? And oh, I thought of that. And I always say to them, take 3 days and write down every single question you think you'd like to ask me additionally. And I just email them. It's an open door. Like, you can text me, email me as much as you want. You have your contact now, and just, you know, and this is before we're even working together as coach athletes, just part of the interview process. Like, okay, in 1 hour, we're not going to cover everything. This is just sort of a how do you do? My name is first introduction. And from here, we're going to keep getting to know each other. And then from there, you know, I say after 3 days, we'll get in touch and you can decide whether we want to talk again. I've even had athletes, like a couple professional athletes that I've worked with, the next step I say to them is, okay, you need to fly to Tucson for 3 or 4 days. And we're going to ride together, run together, swim together. And I'm going to actually spend a weekend with you, and you're going to spend a weekend with me, and then we're going to go from there. So I think depending on the level of what the athlete needs, you know, that can be part of that whole setup process too, to really get to know them.
Totally. Yeah. I think if that's a possibility, that's always a great way to really see an athlete, like, you know, breathing hard on a session, and then know, like, you know, what they rate that as far as like RPE, and you can really much better feel by being there in person. Yeah. Slight curveball here. Have you ever had an athlete who maybe this is their first time working with a coach and they just don't know what questions to ask? And if that's the case, like what do you prompt them with, or what do you kind of throw out there? It's like, okay, well, these are things you should ask. Like, 'cause I guess one of the things, I usually do is have people make sure they're interviewing at least a few coaches to get a few different perspectives. And if they don't know what questions to ask, like maybe trying to give them some feeder questions so that, you know, like, you can just answer them. But then, like, if they interview another coach, like, you know, what kind of things would you ask in a coach interview? I guess if I wanted to actually say that succinctly.
I have a tricky way of answering that. So I have this this questionnaire. I don't think it's the answer you want. It's the answer you're going to get. I have my questionnaire, and I ask about a lot of like goals, and like I have a section where I ask about triathlon goals over certain time periods, like long term, like basically short term, long term, medium. I missed medium, medium term. And so basically like a year and less, two years, and then 3 to 5 years out. And then I do the same thing with like life goals. And I ask people about their schedule, like literally like how long is your drive to work? And a lot of people don't answer those questions because they don't think it's like really important, or they just will add in the stuff about swim, bike, run. And so then I get that back, and then I go through everything they gave me, and I ask a bunch of questions about as many different things I can. And when we talk on the phone, I'm often just going through this massive list of questions. And then I, within each question, if it's something as simple as schedule, I try to figure things out, like, oh, does this person generally eat breakfast, or like, when do they eat breakfast, and how does that flow into their day, and how is their sleep schedule, and how stressed are they for a workout? How much prep time do they need for a workout? All these questions. And I use that to make the point that everything about their life matters to me. And I guess that's my take home point, is like, I try to make them comfortable knowing that I'm actually going to take the time to take a note about the fact that if you leave at X time, your drive's 20 minutes. And if you leave at another time, your drive's 10 minutes. Like, that matters to me, if that makes sense. So that's my general thought.
I think if you have someone who's like brand new to the sport, and they've literally never been coached in their life, and they don't even know what it is that they're, how to interview a coach, how does this process even work? I think the most important question to ask them is what are they looking for? You know, and most people, if they're at that point where they're like, okay, I need some help here, if they really just write down that simple question of what is it that I'm shopping for here, basically, I'll use myself as an example. I was like, I've done a very tiny bit of track cycling. You know, I obviously have been riding a bike a long time, but I don't know anything really in terms of, the specifics of track cycling and all the little ins and outs to do really well at it. So it's like, okay, if I'm going to seek out someone that I need help with this, I have a list of like, this is what I'm looking for. Like, I know what it is that I need help with. So if someone's brand new to a sport and they're like, how do I even get started with this process? And, I looked you up, you look pretty cool, I liked your photos, so like, I need a coach. You might even say to them, okay, well, here's how I do things. This is how I think I could help you. Tell me what your goals are. Now, if you're going to go ahead and interview 5 other coaches and get a feel for what they're like, make sure you have a clear list of what it is that you're hoping to do and what you're hoping to get out of that coach and what you're hoping to learn. And I think when people know that, then they're going to know exactly what they're looking for. I think that was your original question there, Jesse, is like, if someone's brand new to this thing, like, how do I even start this process? I had a person like that not that long ago. She was actually a gymnast and a ballroom dancer. And she's like, I don't know. I don't even know, what I'm looking for. And I said, well, okay, well, you're looking for someone to teach you how to do triathlon from the start. So like, what shorts to buy, what equipment to buy, those kinds of things. So
lower heels.
Yeah. So I don't know if that sort of helps that along a bit.
Yeah, totally. That was good. And just to circle back to what Elliot was saying. Yeah. I think it is always important to know, what's going on in an athlete's life. And that also takes some time to develop that relationship, right? Where they can tell you like kind of the ins and the outs of their life and have that be okay.
Yeah. I just realized with what Marilyn was saying is I try to use all that information to then like explain what my job would be. And at the end of the day, my job is to help the athlete get to whatever their goals are. And their goals, in my perspective, are up to them, right? Whether it's finish an Ironman, do a triathlon, or PR in the 400 meters, it's up to them.
So yeah, you kind of take their goals and use that to run through the process that Marilyn was talking about kind of like helping them come up with what they're looking for.
Yeah, exactly. That. And then say like, well, this is how I can help you, or this is how I can't help you, or this is how a coach could make a positive change for you. And then from there have the discussion of like, is that something you're actually looking for? And like me personally, as you know, Jesse, I am not exactly like a motivator, right? Like I feel like I'm not going to sit there and say rah, rah things like you'll be doing the hardest track workout of your life. And I'll be like, that was great. in this exact tone I'm talking right now. As my mom has thrown many pieces of fruit at me for not having, for being too monotone. But that's just kind of how I am. But so then that's one of the things you might have to find out. And certain athletes are literally looking, they're looking more for that external motivation. And that's not how I personally work, but there's a lot of coaches who are great at that, like really quite good. And for certain athletes, that's what they need. And so if I find an athlete who's clearly more looking for that external motivation to get them out, and that's what they're looking for, then I'm probably not the best coach for them. And I'm saving them a hassle, and I'm saving myself a bad review. If we can find them someone else who would work better.
Yeah. I've met some coaches that are really good at that. And they were like sharing some of the things that they do in order to like motivate athletes. And I was like super impressed, and I was like, that's awesome, but that's not me. So yeah, I know what you mean, but there are definitely some great coaches out there who do a really good job with that.
Well, I mean, and when you think about it, that's probably why we worked together for so long, right? Like if you had a different personality, then I wouldn't have been able to coach you that long.
Right. And I guess, Marilyn, do you want to jump in there?
No, I was just going to say, if we're, you know, if you've already worked with, say you're already, we get past the point of like the setup process, and we say, you know, you want to work with this athlete, you think they're going to be a great, you know, great athlete to work with that suits your style really well, and you're motivated to help them, you know, you can help make them better. The athlete's really excited to work with you. They know that, you know, your style and what you have to offer is going to help them achieve their goals. I think like the next step from there, in terms of how do they continue to get the most out of, you get the most out of the athlete, and the athlete get the most out of you as a coach. I've athletes that I've coached. I have one guy that I've coached for about 15 years now. And then I have several that are on the 10 year, 8 years, 6 years. So obviously those relationships have evolved over a long period of time based on, you know, what's happening in their life and what they need as they develop as an athlete. You know, most of the athletes on, if I had to put an average on the athletes I coach, it's between 6 and 8 years. So, you know, what I think them continuing to get the most out of me is me understanding where they're at in their life and what they need at that time to continue to make them better. And just remember that could be from the athlete side or the coach side, sort of an evolving process over time to make that relationship keep working and keep getting the most out of each other. I don't know if either of you have athletes that you've seen a difference between like long-term relationships or ones that are only, you know, 2-3 years, those kinds of things.
Yeah. I mean, 100% Jesse, I mean, do you want to just comment on like how you probably viewed me the first year or two versus the last 3, 4, 5 years? And then now that I don't coach you, but obviously we're basically coworkers at this point. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think that our obviously over the decade, our relationship changed a lot together. Right. And I knew relatively nothing at the beginning. Like, I think I was going for long rides with like a lunchbox and stopping and eating under a tree. And
I mean, you still have one of those in the front of your bike?
Well, I, but now they're cool again. So 10 years ago, that wasn't quite as cool. I feel like in the beginning I was very, very sponge-like and just kind of believed every word that you said, to be gospel, and not that it wasn't, but that's how I took it, even if it was, or not.
Everyone makes mistakes, but before we got on for the listener, I basically was admitting, yeah, I think I probably screwed up a lot the first few years there, but, yeah, anyways, carry on.
But you know, over time I started like kind of almost learning what questions to ask about workouts, and I remember in the beginning you would give me like, you were trying to learn how to teach me how to ride hard on a bike, cause it was something I was not good at. Uh-huh. So you give me like uphill sprints, and you'd use a cyclist name. I can't remember who, And I have to go like Google the cyclist to be like, who's this guy I'm supposed to be emulating as I'm riding hard up a hill? But like, you wouldn't even give me like RPE, just like, okay, basically ride like this guy as hard as you can up a hill.
Vinokurov.
And it's like 6 by 3 minutes.
I had to do the math on what year it was and who would have been the best guy riding uphill. But the crazy Kazakh who's shocked full of drugs, but yeah, he rides hard.
But yeah, starting out with things like that. And then like, eventually I got a heart rate monitor and a power meter and we got kind of more scientific in our approach. But basically like, yeah, like the communication totally changed over time from, yeah, just ride really hard and like figure out how to do that. And then working on like, how does this get more specific? And
so you said like, we want to like, how do you get the most out of your coach? And so from my perspective, I mean, and granted, this is a long time ago, so we both probably have foggy memory, but the thing that I got out of you is you were super honest, like with what you were good at and bad at. And you were doing local group rides. You were in Durango at the time, which is a small town, but has a super fast riding population. That's accurate, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like for per capita, probably strongest in the world. Although Howard Gratz just moved from Missoula or from Durango to Missoula. So maybe it's in Missoula now, which is where I am. No big deal. So the point being is you were really open with what you felt like you could or couldn't do. And you were like, it was clear to me that there was something that was frustrating you. And it wasn't, and me personally, I think I was realizing it wasn't that you weren't strong. It was like, you didn't understand how you could ride a bike, how aggressively you can ride a bike. And that was something that like, it didn't matter what your power was. We had to change your mindset to what you can do on a bicycle. And obviously now it's like that lesson from however many years ago completely changes to the conversation we were just having, where you're trying to ride in the first or second pack of a professional race. And like that lesson then led to a course where you can be top 10 at professional Ironmans. But I think that's what you did a really good job of. You were like open and just telling the truth and like what really frustrated you and what you wanted to get fixed. And then that helped me devise a plan that helped change your outlook on the sport. If that makes sense.
And for an example of something I could have done better, it probably would have been better if I didn't go Google that guy, if I just asked you who he was and what the point was. But I figured it out on my own. But you know, I definitely like could have done a little bit better job asking some questions around those workouts in the beginning.
I do think there's an important process of you know, for the newer coaches listening, understanding at what stage so certain athletes, you get them and they're quite seasoned and they can handle, you know, a lot of information and they can handle, you know, it's going to get maybe very scientific, or you're going to have a really, you know, open line of communication. You're going to be asking a lot of questions and all of these things. It's pretty important to understand what stage of development an athlete is in and what, how much you want to put in their plate at the right time. So where I'm going with this is I had a really beginner athlete and I started her with, here's a piece of paper. And here's three swims and here's, you know, a couple bikes and runs, and you're going to do this for the next 3 weeks. And then just, we're going to meet up at the end of the 3 weeks and you tell me what your paces were and your times were and let me know how it goes. And then we'll go from there. And so this was like and then, you know, years as it went on, is like, okay, and now here's a training plan and here's, you know, now here's emails and now here's text messages and now here's training peaks and now here's a heart rate monitor and here's a power. So, or, and now she's a full-blown, you know, successful, you know, top age group athlete, but it would have done her no good or me not any good to just right off the bat throw, here's a power meter, here's, you know, training peaks, here's, she wasn't ready for it. And so I think for newer coaches listening, it's also understanding like what level your athlete's at, or maybe how they respond best and at what times, what to give them. So it's like more information is good only if it's really the right time and it's needed. And so in the coaching industry,
more information from the coach,
And that's what I mean. Like one of the downfalls. I mean, you want to give your athlete a lot of information. You want them to develop and you want them to learn. However, it needs to be, it's only good if it's at the right time and it can be absorbed, right? If it's over their head, or maybe they're just not coachable at that moment, or they're not in a position where they're, it's a, you know, something that they're going to benefit from. So learning to read athletes, not only sometimes, you know, when they're coming at you with something, I've seen a lot now with coaches who are newer and they don't understand that overcoaching or just being like a funnel of too much information isn't always the right thing right now. And as a coach, you need to really make sure that you know when it is the time to turn that on and say, like, this person needs maybe a lot more right now, or they need this right now, or it's like, hold on a second, now's not the right time for that, or that's too much, or we're getting to that. And I think that just, that takes experience and that takes time of working with a lot of athletes and knowing what that looks like, and not necessarily knowing what it looks like through notes and just communication, because if it is remote, you're not going to get to see that person in person, you know, like, you know, and interact with them outside of just getting notes every single day. And you might say, oh, now's not the time. They might be asking for it. And you say, okay, well, I understand what you're asking, but right now I'd like you to focus on this because now is not the time for that. And just, you know, make sure that everybody understands it's not always more is better. I don't know if you guys see that as.
Yeah, I honestly think that's probably the most important point we've talked about in however many episodes we've talked about. What you don't tell someone, or what you could tell someone and you're not telling them because they're not, in your perspective, they're not ready, or that's not the time for it. Like I coach my girlfriend and she hears me talk to 20 athletes a week. And sometimes I have to make sure the door's closed, right? Because there might be a specific point. It's not necessarily, I mean, she's one of the fastest people in the world, but like, it's not that she can't handle it or whatever. It's just like, she maybe doesn't need to even hear that thought at this moment because it's not going to help her. It's like, right. And so that's like, you want to keep the eye on what you're actually trying to change. So whatever is the thing that you can change is probably what we should be talking about, is, I guess that's the boiler point of it all. I very much agree.
Yeah. I've just seen like a lot of new coaches as they learn the trade and they're excited to coach. And, you know, the athletes are keen as well and have a lot of questions. And maybe there needs to be like just a pause moment where understanding how much to give someone when, the same way you would progressively program something for someone. You know, you don't just come at people with a fire hydrant the same way you wouldn't give them an advanced workouts that they're not ready for. It's, if we're talking on a development standpoint of like the mental edge and what they understand about the sport, you know, you've got to take your time with that. Even if they're coming at you, you know, a newbie, like you said, Jesse, when you're new, you're going to be a fire hydrant of questions. As a coach, you need to figure out, is now the time to just open that up and tell them all this? Or maybe we need to just trickle it in and wait and have them have an understanding this is going to take some time to develop. And so I think, you know, not only for athletes to be listening to this and going, how do I get the most out of my coach and make sure that I'm getting everything I need through, you know, communications and expectations and, you know, those kinds of things, but also as coaches reading, you know, what does this athlete need? How am I going to keep them progressing? And what's the right time, not only with just workouts to give them and progress them, but also information and questions, like, we'll get to that. You know, we'll get to that.
So it's back to the, how does an athlete and a coach communicate? What I would do, or how I like to handle that situation you just talked about, is I say, ask me all these questions. And when someone hits on a question that is a topic that maybe they're not ready for, I straight up just tell them, like, that's a good question, but I need you to do X, Y, Z before we'll talk about it. And it's like, and if you're just dying to know, I'll give you a little bit. But I'm like, hey, I'm not going to answer that question because your brain needs to be focused on another thing. I swear I know the answer. Like, you can make fun of me for withholding whatever, but it's kind of like, my job is to try to like give you what you need when you need it, and just be really open with them. And I think most people, I mean, basically every single person I've ever coached has always been really receptive to that idea, that like,
Sorry for those people listening. My zipper is hitting my microphone. I just realized it. I feel like athletes are really receptive when you're just honest and open, and you tell them like, hey, this is my thought process. I'm trying to do the best for you. And I actually think withholding some information will help you. A woman I coached just did her first Ironman last weekend, Ironman Florida, and pat on the back, it was her first Ironman ever. And she ended up fifth pro, as her first pro race. And I purposely told her I wanted her to walk through the first five aid stations. And I was actually hoping she would walk through all of them, but I was like, do me this solid and walk through the first five. So she didn't try, she didn't train for an Ironman or whatever, but like, she did the last 6 weeks. It's a big, long story. But the point is, she was basically underprepared for this race, and she was clearly fit enough. But what she needed to do was make sure she ate food and was patient early in the run. And the best thing I could come up with on short notice was like, hey, just walk through these first five. And I knew she was going to be smart enough to continue it on, because that was what was doing, what would work. So I can't go in and say, hey, I need you to walk all the aid stations, because she's too competitive. Right. So I had to give her what I thought would then lead to the right situation. And it worked out well in this situation, but like, it's kind of that idea.
Yeah. When I was coaching show jumping, and you know, you'd have a ring of, let's say, eight or nine horses and riders going around a ring, and there's all kinds of noises, and there's, you know, you've got to keep people really, really organized and on point. You're coaching every single one, as well as managing a large group in a, you know, a pretty high environment, you know, like if something could go wrong really fast. And so the one thing we're drilled home about when we even started our coaching certifications with that, when you're coaching in person, you got to remember athletes really only hear one or two things, and they hear the last word you said. So you would never say, don't go fast, because you know what they're going to hear? Go fast. You know, or they might only hear fast, and before you know it, they're like roaring down the ring, and that's it. You know, so you would say like, you basically want to, and you can use this even in remote when you're trying to get something out of an athlete. It's not necessarily, I watch it all the time with new and young coaches now, is they, like I keep using the same analogy, they come at someone with a fire hydrant worth of information before they've even taken the time to watch the athlete for a period of time, whether it be through communication of their Training Peaks notes. That's why I make it mandatory. You're going to download files if you have them, but you're going to make notes in your Training Peaks all of the time, because I'm going to notice the way you communicate, your habits, your patterns, you know, when communication changes. But in person, you know, you're going to be able to say in a couple of words, and same thing now when people read, you write a whole paragraph, they're probably going to remember maybe two or three key little sentences in there. And you got to remember, when they're reading something, they're reading it in their voice, in their head, not in your voice and your head. So, you know, those things need to be really clear. And I think those little fine things you learn with experience and over time, and how different athletes react to different things, that's going to help you be a better coach and get your athletes to get a little bit more out of you. But I mean, where I started with that, if you are in person, you can use that as a whole, like, just remember someone when they're really, really trying hard and they're, you know, in the moment of something, and maybe the wind's in their ears and they're concentrating, they're going to hear maybe one or two words and the last two things you said. And so, you know, in terms of communication as a coach, you're always thinking of those things versus just barreling out a bunch of information at somebody.
That, I guess a take home, Jesse, were you going to say something?
I was.
My quick take home from that, sorry, and I'll let you talk, is if you're the athlete and your coach is saying like, don't do XYZ, ask them to frame it in, what do you want me to do? And like, that would be like, whoever your coach is, ask your coach, what do you want me to do? And if you are coaching, it's always, you tell the, like in my neurophysiology classes in college, like, when you cue someone, you have to cue someone with what they are doing. And Jesse probably knows this. Like, I'm often talking to someone and I stop because I can't think how to tell them what I want them to do. I can only tell them what they want to stop. So like, I'm always like, Jesse, stop doing, but I can't say it. So I just sit there and I pause for a long time before I can figure out how to say it properly. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah, no, I think just to kind of echo your point that coming up with like one thing that an athlete can work on at a time is really important. Whenever I do like individual swim lessons, you know, you look at a swim stroke and you're like, oh, well, there's like 12 things I want to work on here. But I know like from being on both ends of that, like I, you know, I can't give them 12 things. I can't be that fire hydrant because you can't change 12 things at once, right? So you come up with like one thing. What's like the thing that's going to make the biggest impact on their swim right now? And we talk about that one thing, and then hopefully later on, then they can, you know, move on to the next thing. It's just like that process you were talking about, Marilyn, about like kind of adding in more tools or adding, progressing through workouts. It's, yeah, you can work on like kind of one skill at a time. And so, yeah, when you're giving athletes anything, it's focusing on that kind of the biggest bang for their buck right now. And hopefully that evolves over time. And then, yeah, the different athlete communication that Marilyn was also talking about earlier, it's really interesting, right? Cause I do have some athletes where I can write like a paragraph in Training Peaks, and I know that they're digesting it, asking me questions, and they want like some real guidance about exactly like what to do on the workout. And then, you know, there are other athletes where, you know, like, or like myself, sometimes Elliot would just be like, oh, just, you know, full gas in the shootout. And that's like, that's the workout description. It's like, whoa, that was like three words. Okay. And that's, and that was enough. Right. And I didn't need any more. And then there's other times where, you know,
but before you got to three words, we would have had possibly years of conversation to where you got to that point.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And you can be on any end of that spectrum, right? Like Marilyn, you're talking about like a brand new athlete. You might just be like, all right, go ride aerobic for a couple hours. And like, that's fine. They don't need any more than that because they haven't ridden for a couple hours very many times. So just doing that a bunch in the beginning is kind of necessary. Right. And then sometimes, you know, athletes kind of progress and you can give them more information. And yeah, there's kind of different points in an athlete's career where they can handle, or they need different amounts of instruction.
I think one thing on the, like how to get the most out of your coach, there literally is no dumb question. Like you just said, the simple workout, go ride aerobic. I have had a million conversations on what that means. And then the way somebody verbalizes something, you can tell everyone thinks about that basic thing very differently. And just be like open, like, hey, you just need to ask, like, what does this mean? Even if it just means what does go ride aerobically? It also depends, where are they riding? Because if they're only riding uphill in the snow or in 90 degree heat, like aerobically is maybe not an option or whatever the situation might be. So I really don't think there's any dumb question, and you should totally be open to asking your coach literally anything you can think of.
And yeah, I think on that note, the way people interpret that can be very different, right? So like, you know, I've got some people where I'm like, oh, just ride super easy, because they're just going to ride like pretty hard no matter what. So like barely pressure on the pedals. And other people where like, you know, you probably have to tell me to kind of ride steady, or if you tell me to ride easy, I'm going to average like 12 and be like, yeah, that was fun. I was riding easy. Like my heart rate wasn't over 100, but that worked. So yeah, your verbiage has got to be kind of like dependent on the athlete, right?
But, and from the athlete side, you should just like, give it, like Marilyn said, as much information as you can give someone. There's not really too much information. You know, I have athletes who like have like, basically I read their diary and it's awesome. Like it takes them a lot of time and sometimes I feel bad, but then you realize, oh, this is actually like, this is for them, but it also helps me do my job really well. And then you have something to look back on and you can like see what someone's feeling, and it takes a little bit longer to read or whatever. But like, who cares? Because you're going to be doing your job so much better, you know? So that, I think anything you can do, whatever way you personally organize your thoughts, whether it's through talking to someone or writing down notes, et cetera, or even taking pictures and like writing little smiley face things, whatever works to get your personal thoughts and ideas about the workouts and your life in general to your coach is going to help.
Sorry, Marilyn, I know I keep boxing you out, but I just wanted to share one thing about like when I started working with Elliot. It was, we started out remote before we met in person. And I actually like physically mailed you my like last 3 years of training journals or whatever. Yeah. And yeah, it was like a training journal/personal journal. So before you like knew much about me, you would like,
I knew what your handwriting was.
And yeah,
I was like, this guy's just as messy as me. But no, but I think that matters, like, cause you notice like little things like that. And you're certainly not the first person to mail me stuff. And some people are really nervous and like for good reason, like if maybe don't mail someone that you don't know someone in common. Like at this point, your roommate was someone I was coaching. So like, okay, you had a pretty good idea. And he'd previously been my roommate too. So you were like, okay, this guy's probably not going to screw me over and put my journal on the internet. But like, yeah, anything like that just helps a bunch.
Marilyn, you want to jump in? Are you good over there? I feel like I was boxing you out.
No, not at all.
We were doing the 2-on-1. It was
it's all good stuff. It's good communication. I mean, I think the main thing is that like from both sides, obviously our main point is that communication is the key for it's a relationships business, right? I mean, someone mm-hmm. comes to you, they want to get better. You obviously they're coming to you because they think that you have some knowledge about this or you can help them. And then you develop a working relationship to make sure that keeps happening. And it's work in progress, right? And like making sure that the communication stays on point, whether it's the athlete expressing what they need and what they're feeling and what's going on with them and being open and honest about that. And then the coach being willing to, you know, ask a lot of questions and watch and see a lot of things, not necessarily always asking, but just also being involved and aware and you know, really on top of what's going on with each person and you know, genuinely interested and care. I think that's the big part of it. And then, you know, the other thing that you see really different now that maybe we haven't touched on is and we've sort of touched on it and that we keep talking about these, you know, long-term coach athlete relationships, how they develop and how they're successful. But you do see a little bit of now where people hire a coach for one race and then they go away and maybe they hire a coach for, you know, 6 months or change coaches every year, that kind of thing. And so I think the industry has changed a lot over the years. Fortunately, I don't see a lot of that in my coaching, but I certainly have seen it a little bit. I've noticed the change within the industry where maybe, you know, there's a little bit more of that. And so, you know, if an athlete knows what it is that they want, do they want a long-term commitment from a coach and it's going to be a working relationship that requires all of this, you know, this type of commitment from both sides? Or are you just an athlete that's like, hey, I just want like, I want 12 weeks of programming to my next race. I want a tiny little bit of feedback on my files and I don't really want to put any touchy feely emotion on it. I don't really want you to get to know me. So that goes back to that setup process. Like, what is it that you need and what is it that you're looking for and making sure that's upfront. Because, you know, if you're a coach that's asking a ton of questions from an athlete, that's like, look, all I really wanted was some workouts and for you to tell me how my data looked and how it compares to what it is that I'm trying to achieve, then you're just making sure that, you know, that's all on point and in line with one another. And then on the other side of it, if you've got someone, an athlete that's actually wanting that kind of relationship with an athlete and is looking for a long-term coach, and you end up with someone who's, you know, barely giving you anything, they're just like, here's your workouts. And I look at your data from time to time, then maybe those don't last that long. So, sorry, I kind of went.
But that could be
directions with that, but.
But for like, how does an athlete get the most out of their coach? I think a lot of that is trying to figure out what kind of coach is that person. Cause some people's entire business model is like, I'm going to coach you for one race and then I'll see you later. Or maybe, you know, and some people like kind of specialize that. And clearly the three of us don't, I mean, we all have coached people for much longer. And that's kind of like our model, but it just depends. What do you want from your coach and telling them that? So I think it's totally worthwhile. If you wanted a coach who's going to like grow in a relationship or be around for a long time, they don't necessarily have to have a ton of experience, right? Because like when I started coaching Jesse, I'd only coached a couple of people over 2 years because I'd only been coaching professionally for a couple of years, but he knew like, it seemed like I was really into it, right? So if you're 20 years old and you have no money
it might be worth it trying to go with whoever's leading your college team who seems obsessed with triathlon and really wants to give it a go, because that might work for one, with your budget, and two, like kind of you're on the same playing field, and just making sure whatever you're trying to find, that you and your coach are both kind of like after the same kind of goals and guidelines.
Yeah, that was good. I agree with that. I mean, that's kind of like that initial interview process, right? You kind of find out if you guys are on the same page, and if you're not, then, you know, there are definitely a lot of different style coaches out there that you can find.
And just matching that up to who you are and trying to be honest to yourself and honest to what your real goals are. So I don't think we've said it explicitly yet, but just being honest with your coach about what your goals are, and don't tell him what you think the coach wants to hear. Tell him what your actual goals are, right? If your goal is to like win the Olympics and you're a total beginner, it doesn't matter if it seems outlandish. Like, you should tell him what it is. I've had people who say, I'm kind of a beginner at this, but I want to be a professional triathlete. And then I'll respond like, okay, that's great. Like, also, how much work do you want to put in? And if they're like, oh, well, I'm only willing to put in 12 hours a week or 11 hours a week, but I want this to be my job, then it's my job to say, okay, maybe you're nuts. But if they say, I'm going to put in the time, or, you know, I have this background in XYZ sport, but I don't know how to swim, or I've never really run before, but I knew in swimming, I was cool with swimming 60, 70, 80, 100K a week, and this is the effort I'm going to put in. Just being really forward with the coach on how hard you're willing to push yourself. And if you're not sure, tell them you're not sure. That doesn't make you a bad athlete or somebody that's not worthy of a coach. You're still totally worthy of a coach. You just have to know like what's right for you right then, and you can change your answer down the road. So just be like super open, as much as you're willing to. And I think that helps both sides.
This is a funny story that you guys will laugh at. That was me. You know, when I took up triathlon in 1999, and I'd only done it a couple years, and I'd done like a bunch of Olympics and Olympic distance triathlons, some sprints. I'd done, you know, the Great White North half. I did a few, and I didn't even really do like great. I just did okay. Like, I think I was like second or third in my age group, you know, sort of top 10-ish overall. And when I got in touch with my longtime coach, Scott Molina, I said that. I was like, I want to win an Ironman. Like, I was like, Lori Bowden was my hero at that time, Nitesh Badman, Lori Bowden. And I was like, I want to be them. Like, I want to be as fast enough to win an Ironman. And another coach other than him might've looked at, you know, here's this show jumping girl who's been in triathlon a couple years from Canada, emailing, you know, one of the all time greatest triathletes in the sport in New Zealand, saying, I want to be a pro and I want to win. You know, another person might have not taken me seriously and kind of brushed me off, but he took me really seriously. And
I just want the people who are listening to know there is a major argument to say that Scott Molina maybe is the greatest triathlete of all time.
Yeah.
And people have kind of forgotten about him. But anyways, like, you're not kidding. Like, if you go through the history books of the most wins and everything in the pro race,
120 wins, all different, you know, Ironman,
professional wins,
120 professional wins. So, you know, he's in the Hall of Fame, all those things. So, you know, someone else might've laughed at me, but I was really honest and upfront right from the start. And you know what? We made it happen. And that was really cool. And he did tell me, you know, exactly the conversations that you're talking about. He sat me down and had some real face-to-face, heart-to-heart conversations of like, this is what it's going to take. And are you willing to do that? And this is what it's going to take coming from your shoes. Like, and some of those conversations were pretty tough, but I was willing to do it. And I did everything he told me to, and we made it happen. I mean, I did get lucky and fortunate enough to win one and stay on the podium and have some good results and have a good career and get the most out of myself as a triathlete. And I think, you know, that says a lot for him to take me from literally an email from some chick who had barely done any triathlons in Calgary to where he took me was sort of a pretty phenomenal statement about his personality and his communication. And that helped evolve me an athlete and as a coach and how I handle things too. So that's, I just wanted to share that based on what
But you guys, it sounds like the, I mean, obviously you guys are both very accomplished, but at the time you were less so.
I mean, yeah, I was, didn't know anything. I rode horses.
but what you did well is you were just super open and honest. And, mm-hmm. and it sounds like what he did well was just like, yeah, I mean, like the thing with triathlon is, you know, it does take a little bit of talent, but what it takes more than anything is a bunch of hard work.
Yeah.
And then just being like really open as to just like one, how much time and what is your life situation? How hard can you actually work? And then two, are you really, really willing to go do it? And what that encompasses.
Yeah. And it's having those conversations of like, if this is what your goal is, this is what it's going to take. And both people, and I really use that when people come to me is, you know, if your goal is like, I went to him, this is what I want to do. And he said, all right, well, we're going to get started. And then within 6 months time, I want you to fly all the way over to New Zealand and come train with me for 6 months. And that was within the first 6 months of being under him. And I said, okay. And I did, I packed up and I flew all the way from Calgary to New Zealand and I'd never flown across the world. I had never met him in person. I didn't know anyone who was going to be there or anything, but I was like, he was all in and I was all in and I was honest about it. So was he. And then the commitment was there from both sides, you know, and then he did. I mean, that, I think that sort of message is still my approach today. If someone comes to me and says, whatever their goal is, like we talked about, is everything in line with your goals? Is your commitment level, is your life organized? Is your, you know, whatever that is, it might be on a different scale based on what your goal is. And so making sure those things are in line, and then both people are kept accountable that you're both at that same commitment level, whatever level that is. It might be much, much less. It might be, you know, as high as mine was at that
time. Your example is basically like the more or less like the highest level of commitment you're going to find, not more or less it is. So like, if you're sitting here and you're like, wait, what the heck? I just wanted to finish a sprint triathlon and I don't know how to swim. Well, it's like, you don't need to, that same coach, if they're doing their job right, they say, well, what's your goal? Oh, you want to finish a sprint triathlon and like, you want to have fun while doing it. And like, it's okay to tell your coach that you're there for fun and this workout was boring. Like, spice it up a little bit. Like, you can tell your coach that, you know, you're like, I mean, Jesse's done that to me before too, where it was just like, I figured out, it was like, oh, like he's willing to go super, super hard. But like at a certain point, he's not willing to just do the most mundane thing 1 million times in a row. He's only going to do it 12 times in a row, you know? So like Jesse's extremely committed, but like at a certain point, it was like, he was like, hey, let's spice it up. And that's everyone,
yeah.
You know? And so you just have to like let the coach know, like, hey, I need some spice in my life, or like, this is getting dull, or I don't like this training partner you're making me train with. Like stuff like that is all on the table.
One time I was in squad with Brett Sutton over in Thailand, and there was we were all smashing out in the pool. You got to imagine 30 athletes going up and down this tiny little pool. And there was a particular athlete that we at the time were pretty competitive with one another, had a clash in personalities, and we would come to the end of the lane and complaining about the other one, complaining about the other one. And Brett was trying to manage our little, you know, rivalry going on between each other, and he would purposely send us out on bike rides together just because he knew both of us would be so pissed it would bring out something that he wanted out of us just on those rides. It was like, oh god, we did end up becoming friends over time, but it was pretty funny at, you know, for a little period of time there.
And you have to be able to balance those relationships, but you also have to be like open. If you guys didn't end up becoming friends, it probably would have been your job to be like, look, if you do this again, like I'm out of here. Or like, this is not going to fly. Right. Cause there's other people. I mean, there's a situation like that happening right now at high level of sport, that I will not name names or groups or anything, but like, I know that, a coach that's somewhat well known is like keeping athletes apart in the same group, even though they're the same speed doing the same races. And you'd think they'd be friends, but no. So anyways, I'm keeping it super vague on purpose. So anyways, I'll tell you off air, but yeah. And that's just part of it. And that's how you, and that's how it, maybe these two people are going to work best, and that's okay too.
So. All right. That was fun story time, gang. I enjoyed that. Let's wrap it up. And just, it seems like the one thing I'm hearing repeated over and over again for how to get the most out of your coach here is really just like open and honest communication 100% of the time from the athlete and the coach back and forth. And that's kind of the nutshell. I don't know. Do you guys have anything else to add to that little summary?
Be willing to, it's okay to challenge your coach and tell them exactly what you want. And it's okay to tell them what you're thinking. And that's kind of like almost your job as a athlete. You're paying for a service, and to actually get the most out of your service, that's what you need to do. And if you're not doing that, it's going to be really hard for the coach to actually coach you all that well. And you don't have to do that. It's whatever you're comfortable with, but just kind of make sure, like, one, only do something you're comfortable with. And two, if you are comfortable with your coach and telling them more information about yourself, you should feel like that's going to help the situation, not hurt it.
Yeah, I don't think there's a whole lot to add. I mean, just making sure that the communication is what everybody is comfortable using. So whether it be training notes or it's files or a combination of the two, and just making it really, obviously from a coach's perspective, the more the better, because the more you can gather from, whether it be subjective or not subjective, and you're putting that all together and it's consistent over time, many months, many years, that kind of thing. But whatever the athlete's comfortable with being able to share, the more of that, the better, and just being really consistent with that. And if it's not happening, then, take responsibility. If it's not, the athlete's not getting what they need, voice up. If the coach isn't getting enough information, then go ahead and probe the athlete and ask them. So yeah, I think, communication, consistency, and, that's like any relationship, that's probably going to make it most successful.
Awesome. I know I'm really trying to wrap it up here, but I just want to throw one more thing in. And that one thing I think that I did was a good takeaway from my time working with Elliot is that how you communicate doesn't matter as long as you actually communicate. So like, I've got a guy that leaves me voicemails every day on his way to work, 'cause that's like his kind of free time. And like, that's fine. I a lot of times I'll just type that in Training Peaks for him, 'cause that's easier for him to just leave me a voicemail. So like, being willing to be creative with how you communicate, as long as the communication is there, I think is important on all ends. But I think that was good. I think you guys did a great job wrapping up, and I just rambled on a little bit there, but so if anyone listening to this does have some questions, feel free to fire them at any one of us, and we can always add them to our topics list. All right. Thank you guys for spending some time with me today.
Thanks guys.
Jesse. Thanks, Marilyn.